good morning, everyone. Cold morning.
In Jerusalem at the moment, it's 15 degrees.
All right.
We're going to go to Jerusalem this morning. Jerusalem, and we're going to think about it. It's an ancient city. It's a city in the news, isn't it? It's a city of interest to Bible students. The name Jerusalem means foundation of peace, or city of peace. It has a history going back 4,000 years, and it is estimated that during that time, Jerusalem has been destroyed twice, has been besieged 23 times, has been captured and recaptured 44 times, and it has been attacked 52 times. Hardly a city of peace, is it? It's quite surprising, actually, that this city should be a city of importance. The city has no natural geological resources. It has no harbour. It has no river. It has no reason to have a strategic significance. It no longer controls trade routes, and it has no obvious reason for geopolitical relevance. Yet, this is a city with tensions and unsolved problems that I think we all know could easily trigger a world war. World leaders struggle with the issue of what stance to take about Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem is mentioned in the Bible over 1,000 times. Usually it's called Jerusalem, or sometimes Zion. We had Zion in that reading from Psalm 48, didn't we? But it also goes by a number of other names, such as Ariel, Salem, Jebus, or Moriah. It's difficult to give a precise number of Bible references because some names are more like descriptions of qualities or describe parts of the city. But it is clearly a city that features prominently in the Bible and therefore is pertinent to Bible students. It's well worth thinking about this city. The land surface area of the earth is estimated to be 510.1 trillion square kilometres. That's a huge number. The land surface area of the hotly disputed old city part of Jerusalem is less than 1 square kilometre. Why argue about ownership of such a tiny area of land when so much other land is there on earth? Why is Jerusalem so significant? Now, I live in York, and if you know York, you'll be familiar with its walls. They encompass an area that is quite small, but actually that area is larger than the old city of Jerusalem. Today, we know Jerusalem is a big city. We're talking here specifically about the old city part of it. That means the walled city as it was 1,000 years ago. That's the bit over which there is much contention. Go back 2,000 years, and it was actually a bit smaller still, and the boundaries were a bit different. Go back 3,000 years, and it was smaller even still, and a different shape, but essentially the same location. The old city of Jerusalem can be divided into 4 quarters. Four parts, if you like. One's a Muslim part, one's a Jewish part, and 2 parts are Christian. These parts equate to the 3 major world religions that have a particular interest in Jerusalem. The Muslim quarter includes 2 mosques on the Temple Mount, the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They are Islamic special places. The Jewish quarter includes the Wailing Wall of significance to Judaism. And the Christian area of Jerusalem includes the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, thought by tradition to be the site of Jesus' crucifixion, hence it's a place of pilgrimage for some Christians. Now, we're trying to focus on the Bible this morning, and the Bible reveals no reason for us today to seek to make any location within present-day Jerusalem special for the purpose of worship, or as a pilgrimage destination. What we might term biblical Christianity is very different from the traditional Christianity that is reflected in the three dominant Christian denominations that share interest in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. They are the Roman Catholic Church, the Greek Orthodox Church, and the Armenian Apostolic Church. Now, as there are three dominant religions, so there are also three political claims about the status of Jerusalem. A 1980 Israeli law declares Jerusalem to be the complete and united capital of Israel. In the Palestinian Liberation Organization's Palestinian Declaration of Independence of 1988, Jerusalem is stated to be the capital of the state of Palestine. And UN General Assembly Resolution 194 envisaged Jerusalem as an international city. And actually, during recent decades, the papacy has given support to the idea of Jerusalem being an international city. For some people, the tensions in Jerusalem are all about politics. And for some people, it's all about religion. And for some people, it's a mix of the two. One interesting thing to note is that each of the three religions that we have mentioned advocates peace. And there are many in Jerusalem that advocate peace and try hard at working together to make Jerusalem a vibrant, multicultural city. And in many ways it is. But there are also many that are very focused, we might say fanatical, about their political or their religious feelings. This leads to the city of peace being in reality a city of conflict. Or as someone who knows people who live in Jerusalem described it to me as a city of fear. We're going to try and take a biblical approach to this. Look in the Bible and we can read how 2,000 years ago Jesus gazed upon the city of Jerusalem. And we read in Luke's Gospel that as he, that is Jesus, drew near, he saw the city, that is Jerusalem, and he wept over it. He had a great insight into God's plan. He knew it would be a city of fear before it was to become a city of peace. Okay then, so what stance does the Bible student take to the very different political and religious opinions regarding Jerusalem? And again, it's the words of Jesus that guide us. Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence." So as followers or servants of Jesus, or those who are aspiring to be followers or servants of Jesus, we don't get involved in the worldly politics, because our political allegiance is to the future kingdom of God upon earth. Nor do we get involved with any of the three dominant religions in Jerusalem today, because we can identify that whilst each has some element we might agree with, each also has significant proportions of their teachings that are contrary to the Bible message. But although we step aside from the political and religious conflicts of Jerusalem, we are very interested to observe. Not just from idle curiosity either, but because the things happening in Jerusalem can both warn us and encourage us. Here we have no continuing city, but we seek the one to come. Jerusalem, as it now is, will not continue in its present state of turmoil and conflict. We look for a city to come, a future renewed Jerusalem. And eventually this city will become what the Bible terms New Jerusalem. But that does not make us unconcerned about what is happening in current day Jerusalem. Because the Bible tells us to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And that's something we can do right now. We don't have to wait for the future to say a prayer concerning the peace of Jerusalem. Okay, so whose city is it then? The ownership of the old city part of Jerusalem is the bit, as we said earlier, that is particularly contentious. So, who does it belong to? Is it Arab? Is it Israeli? Or should it have some kind of international status? Look in the Bible, and we find it actually none of these. It's God's city. We read in Zechariah chapter 3 that the Lord has chosen Jerusalem. And in Psalm 2, God speaks of Jerusalem as my holy hill of Zion. And you will remember from our reading from Psalm 48 that we had a moment ago in verse 1 that it is called the city of our God. God, through the prophet Isaiah, talks about my holy mountain Jerusalem. In the New Testament, Jerusalem is called the city of the living God. God is at work with Jerusalem. That's because it's his city. So although we don't get involved with its current politics or dominant religions, we are very interested to see God's hand at work with Jerusalem. In the same way he is at work with Israel, his chosen people. God, through the prophet Isaiah, tells Israel, "You are my witnesses and my servant whom I have chosen, that you may know and believe me." In the New Testament, the true Christian hope is described as the hope of Israel. Now, saying we believe in the hope of Israel does not mean we support the political objectives of current day Israel. Rather, we associate with the Bible promises made to Israel. And one of these promises, very interestingly, tells us that although Israel was chosen to demonstrate the way that God works with humankind, through the work of Jesus, anyone on earth can share in them, be they Israeli, or Arab, or British, or whatever. This is wonderful. And we can see the hand of God at work in this city. And God at work with his chosen people, Israel. In Genesis 28, God makes a promise to Jacob. Now, Jacob was the grandson of Abraham. Jacob's name was changed to Israel, and he became the father of the Jewish nation. And this was the promise that he received. In your seed, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And when he uses the word seed, seed means descendant, and his descendants actually became the nation of Israel. Okay? It was actually a prophecy of the work of Jesus. Although God shows us who he is through the nation of Israel, including the work he does in Jerusalem, that the aim is a blessing available to all families of the earth. In this way, Jerusalem actually has the potential to be very international. Okay, let's talk about a guy called Melchizedek. Now, we only read about him two or three times in the Bible, so you may not be aware of him. If you haven't, do search him out. It's fascinating to look at him. He's quite a noteworthy person. And the first time we come across this guy Melchizedek is right at the beginning of the Bible, in Genesis. Not quite at the beginning, nearly enough there, chapter 14. Listen to this, what it says in Genesis chapter 14. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was the priest of God Most High, and he blessed him. Now, him here is Abram, who is to have his name changed to Abraham. Okay? So he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abram of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth." Now, using Psalm 76, we can deduce that this place, Salem, is the same as Zion, which from numerous other Bible passages we know to be the same as Jerusalem. So here in the 14th chapter of the Bible is the first reference to Jerusalem. And this is significant. Way back into history, and we find Jerusalem's first recorded king was also a priest of God. The Hebrew for peace is Shalom, a bit like Salem. Hence, King of Peace. And Jerusalem, city of peace. Look in the New Testament, and the reader is encouraged to think particularly about our friend Melchizedek. It says, now consider this, how great this man was, to whom even the patriarch Abraham gave a tenth of the spoils. Now in Jerusalem today, we have three great faiths that can be traced back to Abraham. The Bible tells us Abraham was a man of great faith. But the Bible is asking us in the book of Hebrews to consider this a bit more and think about how there was someone even greater than Abraham. The Hebrews record then goes on to explain that Jesus is a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. Hebrews 7 also tells us that Melchizedek, in anticipation of Jesus, was king of righteousness and king of Salem, meaning king of peace. Put this together, and we have Jesus as a picture of righteousness, and righteousness means true justice, and it means peace, and we have righteousness and peace lasting forever. Look back at the previous quotation there from Hebrews 7 verse 17. Isn't this what Jerusalem really needs? Isn't this the long-term solution to the conflicts about Jerusalem? Jerusalem, a city of peace and righteousness, that's true justice, forever. And if you want to do some more Bible exploration about Melchizedek using the book of Hebrews, then I suggest you do. And if you do that and you get to know this man, Melchizedek, you might want to take up the challenge to try and bring him into your conversation when you talk to people who are anxious about the city in Jerusalem. It's a very good talking point. Whatever your level of belief in the Bible, start to talk to people. There is quite a lot of concern around about the situation in Jerusalem, understandably. And we want to say something and encourage, perhaps take up the challenge and talk to them about Melchizedek. A bit of a slightly different way of approaching it, perhaps, than what you might have thought of doing. A biblical approach to understanding Jerusalem history, including thinking of Melchizedek, can help us see something quite different to the picture of competing faiths and political antagonism battling it out in Jerusalem today. Now, there are three types of Bible prophecy. There is that that has been fulfilled, that is being fulfilled now, and that that will be fulfilled. Let's consider some examples of prophecy that has been fulfilled concerning Jerusalem. In the prophecy of Ezekiel chapter 4, it says, I will cut off the supply of bread in Jerusalem. It happened. And the Chaldeans shall come back and fight against this city, that's Jerusalem, and take it and burn it with fire. It happened. Zion shall be ploughed like a field. Jerusalem shall become heaps of ruins. Well, Micah prophesied that back in 730 BC. It happened. Okay, it wasn't till AD 135 when the Roman Emperor Hadrian ordered the remains of the city of Jerusalem to be broken down and the area to be ploughed over, and so results. Thus says the Lord, after 70 years are completed at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word towards you and cause you to return to this place. And he was talking about Jerusalem. It happened. Then Jesus went out of the temple in Jerusalem, and his disciples came up to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, do you not see all these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down. It happened. The temple was totally destroyed just 40 years after these words were spoken by Jesus. The Wailing Wall, by the way, that is special to Judaism today, is not part of the original temple. It's a retaining wall for the Temple Mount platform. So the temple was totally destroyed. There are different amounts of non-biblical evidence about prophecy fulfillment, different time periods between pronouncement and fulfillment. Some prophecy has more than one fulfillment, and some is yet to be fulfilled. It's not a two-minute job to analyse Bible prophecy. Nevertheless, careful study reveals that Bible prophecy not only confirms the truth of the Bible, it confirms that God has been and is at work in Jerusalem. But as we said earlier, Bible prophecy is not just about history. Here's one Bible prophecy that is being fulfilled as we speak. Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness to all the surrounding peoples when they lay siege against Jerusalem and Jerusalem. And it shall happen in that day that I will make Jerusalem a very heavy stone for all peoples. All who would heave it away will surely be cut to pieces, though all nations of the earth are gathered against it. Just over a year ago, US President Trump controversially announced the US recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and the intention of relocating the US embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. A UN General Assembly motion condemning the embassy move was supported by 128 votes, with only 8 votes against and 35 abstentions. You see, Zechariah 14 is being fulfilled, and it is becoming easier to envisage a situation where the world's armies will close in on Jerusalem in the near future. It is indeed a heavy stone, or if you've got the King James Version, it calls it a burdensome stone. But Jerusalem will not be a burdensome stone forever. We can turn to prophecies yet to be fulfilled. We can see that Jerusalem will eventually become truly a city of peace. Bible prophecies speak of Jerusalem as the capital of God's kingdom on earth, with the Lord Jesus Christ ruling from Jerusalem based on a rebuilt temple. He is indeed a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Here's just one of many prophecies that speak of this. It's from the prophecy of Isaiah. Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. Many people shall come and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations, and rebuke many people. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword any more, neither shall they learn war any more. Notice those words, out of Zion shall go forth the law, and he shall judge between the nations. This peace will not just be limited to Jerusalem, but it will spread to nations of the world. Jesus as king will rule from Jerusalem over a world of peace, all 510.1 trillion square kilometres of it. Although present-day Jerusalem is not a place of pilgrimage for biblical Christians, it will be a place of pilgrimage in the age to come. Did you notice that phrase? Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord. Let us go up to Jerusalem. Well, Jerusalem looks like this today. 15 degrees centigrade, we're told, aren't we? That's what it looks like today. We can picture it. But what will it be like in the age to come? Very difficult to tell, isn't it? Well, I'll share this one with you. One artist had a go at doing that. I'm not sure it's right or not. Probably wrong, because we don't really know a lot of information about it. Parts of Psalm 48 that we began with are a prophecy of the international peace that will fill the earth starting from Mount Zion in Jerusalem. Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, in his holy mountain, beautiful in elevation. The joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion on the sides of the north, the city of the great king. Let Mount Zion rejoice, it says then in verse 18. The city of fear will become a city of rejoicing.